keeping you a step ahead of the changing world of business. This is BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
Welcome to Managing Technology the Right Way with your host, Sun Jogal, brought to you by the University of Phoenix Online. If you don't have time for college, let the college come to you via the Internet. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on this show are strictly those of the host, guests, and callers. Now showing you how to manage technology the right way, here's Sun Jogal.
Good morning, folks, and welcome to the show. It needs careful planning and flawless execution to make technology work for us. But how many times do we succeed? On this show, we invite business leaders and subject matter experts with extensive experience in technology management. The intent here is to learn from their experience and discuss better ways to manage technology. To learn more about the show, please visit talkshow.avval.com. That is talkshow.avval.com. Today's topic is global e-commerce, realizing the full potential. Our guest for today's show is Sunil Arora. Sunil is the Vice President for Global E-Commerce Strategy for Anixter, Inc., a $2.7 billion distributor of communications products and supply chain management services. Sunil has held various positions at Anixter over the past 13 years, including most recently being VP of IT and e-business for Anixter's Europe, Middle East, and Asia division. While in Europe, he led the move of over 30% of the division's revenues onto e-Anixter, Anixter's global B2B e-commerce platform. Anixter Europe now generates over $100 million in sales over the web. His current responsibilities include guiding the direction of Anixter's e-commerce offerings, working with Anixter's sales force on multi-million dollar supply chain management proposals, and teaching the sales organization how Anixter's e-business capabilities can provide them a competitive edge. Good morning, Sunil. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Sanjay. It's good to be here.
How is Chicago treating you? I know we had a lot of rain last night.
Yeah, well, you know something, I was looking out my office window and it's just black outside, and it's only the morning, so besides the snow this year and the rain, everything else is still going pretty well.
That's great. Now, let's get on to the e-commerce set of questions that we have. We know that e-commerce started where we had a lot of skepticism that should I even give my credit card over the internet. Then we suddenly saw a big boom, which basically meant that everybody, literally every household had a website and a shopping cart, and everybody was going overboard with creating those e-commerce sites. Eventually, we had total rejection of that because we saw that there were a lot of failures, and primarily it could be because of business model, but everybody was losing money, so people started rejecting it. And now again, people must have thought that, yes, it had value, but they were going a little more skepticism than usual. So now we see that we've come around a full circle. We lost millions or maybe billions of dollars, and still we are at the same state where we started. So what do you think has happened?
Well, Sanjay, I mean, when e-commerce took off in the late 1990s and early 2000, the issue was everybody thought that we would immediately change our entire shopping habits and basically buy everything online. That, like, immediately will change. And, you know, if you look at people actually don't change very quickly. So the reason for all of that hype was, I think, more financially driven. Okay, we had, because people thought that the internet would fundamentally change everything we do immediately, there was enormous sums of money being invested to make sure that, you know, company A was the first mover. And, you know, you remember all of the valuations that we had.
Yeah, two kids going and getting a $2 million for funding.
There you go. There you go. And so, you know, Yahoo valued at $400 a share. And so most of the hype was, I think, frankly, Wall Street-led, that if you just had a website, you'd make millions. Okay, we had a suspension of disbelief for a while, and thankfully, that crashed. Now, if we go on a bit further from that, everything that was said about the internet back about 4 years ago is actually coming true. Okay, only it's taken a while to get there. And so we were victims of our own, frankly, greed. But if you look today, B2B e-commerce is worth about $2.4 trillion a year. And that has met the most rosiest expectations. And so, frankly, I like that we had that crash because it took all the hype out of it. And now companies are using it for real business gain.
Now, when we say that there is, when we say that these companies were eventually coming together and they are again embracing the e-commerce, and was that because, first of course, you know, as we already know, that there was a lot of correction, but then people are again embracing it now that they know that there's, business models have been validated and technology is in place. Do you think that is just a level of maturity that we did not have at that time, or we are primarily as a country, because I think that's, America was the place, U.S. was the place where it got initiated. Are we primarily a marketing-oriented country versus, so that we run after the hype first, try to get a correction, everybody, goes after that, and when we really burn ourselves badly, then we learn the lesson, and then we come back to reality.
I think that's a very good analogy, because in the U.S., and if you contrast Europe from the U.S., U.S. business model moves faster. We are quicker to adopt anything new. And due to the high competitive nature of our economy, we know that the first mover makes the most money, so we try and get on any bandwagon. Okay, and there is a lot of money out there still to be invested. So I think you're right. There is a lot of money out there, but I don't see any hype anymore. I see loads of sites out there who are eking out a fairly marginal existence, but I don't see the level of hype that we saw 3 years ago. And today I see a lot more thoughtful business models. So I think we have come full circle, but we now have more realistic expectations of what the web can do for us and what it cannot do.
Now, of course, e-commerce uses internet as the backbone, and one of the reasons which it could not have gone truly global earlier is because internet was not as widely accepted and embraced by businesses as well as by general public across the globe.
Yes, precisely.
And that's why I guess, we were not able to get the global perspective on the e-commerce. Now that it's happening, that's great. However, we look at the logistics side of it, where we say, how you deliver, fine, you place an order, but something has to happen at the back end for the whole processing of the, or you can say fulfillment of an order to go through. And logistics issues are definitely different across the whole world. You go to a different country, they've got different pricing structure, they have got different, labor practices and labor rates and things like that, and overall the level of automation that they have allowed so far. So, while we have a consistent look and feel on the internet, which looks very jazzy, but when we talk about the level of service that we get across the globe, that definitely must be marred by this difference or disparate logistics and pricing structure and the labor practices. So do we have to just live with it, or is there something else can be done on that front?
Right now, in fact, there is no global internet business. Even if you look at some of the pioneers and also some of the people who are doing well, and of course we always take Amazon as an example, or even eBay. Basically, they've got different pricing and different models in each country. That's appropriate. I mean, the internet will not change the basic rules of the business. So what it does is it lets more consumers find you in a new way. Okay, so now one of the best examples of cross-border internet traffic is in Europe at the moment. If you look at the EU, which now has 21 or 25 members, there's free movement of goods and services. Yet, even then, prices in each country differ. So, I don't see, frankly, in my lifetime, an ability for us to, you know, have one price across the world or even across the region.
You, just because you think the last mile challenge is what is preventing us, because see, like we have a global way to order or a central place to order, same way we could have a central place to source, and that's where the world is moving towards. Like, you know, we are buying widgets, so we might be getting them from China. So every vendor, whether you're distributing it to Eastern Europe or America or South America, wherever we go, we could source it from China and let that get distributed. So is the price component something where, which is basically making the price different, is the last mile challenge to basically have the goods delivered in that particular location? Is that the only factor? Because that's
yes,
only
yes, it is. Well, it's two things. It's more than the last mile. It is, okay, basically, you and I would not be able to, frankly, place an order for a DVD player to be delivered from China. Okay, now, we could place an order for a DVD player to be distributed from a warehouse in Los Angeles or in, you know, Des Moines, Iowa. Okay, so the manufacturers have to bring their goods in a bulk shipment mode to, let's say, the U.S. Then the last mile or the last few miles comes into play. The other thing is we still have, like, duties to deal with between countries. I mean, the world is not a free marketplace. The U.S. is not a free marketplace, you know. So while we have those country boundaries there, there is no chance for us to have a global ordering, you know, or like global distribution center. You know, again, I'll give you the example of basically prices in, let's say, France and Belgium, which are adjoining countries. And even then, the pricing for the same car in Belgium is different than the one in France. Okay, because the buyer who's in Paris, he may simply choose to go to his local dealer rather than save 5% and ship, and you're buying a car in Belgium. So that's not changing anytime soon.
Yeah, I mean, and that's where we see that there would be a discrepancy, that while we call it global, it's not truly global. That's just because we have not come together as countries to, you know, kind of fade the boundaries.
We haven't. And, you know, I mean, when we started our own e-commerce platform over here, someone told me, oh, well, we're global now. I said, no, we're not. We can basically take the order over with the web. But if a customer is in the UK, we're going to give him a different price than if a customer is in the US. Just being global or just being on the web does not make you global.
That's great. Let's take a quick break, listeners. We'll be right back after these messages, and let's talk a little bit about the B2B versus B2C, what's going on in terms of global e-commerce. So please stay tuned.
Today, college graduates average 75 to 110% more income than non-graduates. But if you don't have time to go to college, let the college come to you via the internet. At University of Phoenix Online, you can earn your degree when and wherever you want in just 2 to 3 years. University of Phoenix is the largest private accredited university in the U.S. We offer degree programs in business, technology, nursing, education, and more. Call University of Phoenix Online at 1-800-797-3011.
Looking for ways to improve your IT department? Then visit www.avval.com today. Avval is a professional services firm with a mission to help companies align IT with their business objectives through strategy, technology, branding solutions, and services. Our commitment is to ensure bottom-line improvements as a result of services rendered by us, whether it's an IT needs assessment, strategy development, or related implementation. We back it up by our unconditional, positive ROI guarantee. To find out how Avval can help your company, visit www.avval.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Avval, making IT work and look better. www.avval.com. Visit today.
Are you ready to get the most out of your money? Listen to Fiscal Fitness with Drs. Don Schutz and Kurt Dickbrenner every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time. On the show, Don and Kurt will discuss investment strategies, tax breaks, goal setting, and more. Whip your finances into shape. Listen to Fiscal Fitness with Drs. Don Schutz and Kurt Dittbrenner every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on BusinessAmericaRadio.com. Talk radio from a business perspective.
Talk radio with a business perspective. This is BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
You are listening to Managing Technology the Right Way, brought to you by the University of Phoenix Online. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free at 1-866-233-7861. Now back to the show. Here's Sun Jogal.
Welcome back to the show, folks. For listeners who've just tuned in, today's topic is Global E-Commerce, Realizing the Full Potential. And our guest for today's show is Sunil Arora. Sunil is the Vice President for Global E-Commerce Strategy for Anixtra Inc., a $2.7 billion distributor of communication products and supply chain management services. Before the break, we were briefly talking about the way the Internet is allowing you to do global e-commerce, but in true sense, it's not that global because of the last mile challenges and other logistics issues, and of course, cross-border embracement of, people are not coming together, countries are not coming together as much as Internet would like it to. And so Sunil, do you think there are companies who have seen, based on the way Internet has moved so far, there has been a fundamental shift?
Yeah, well, Sancho, there is one industry which has undergone a massive change and one which is in process of undergoing a massive change. Now, you know, moving information across borders doesn't cost anything, so you don't have that last mile issues that you have with like hard goods. So if you look at the travel industry today, that industry is being decimated by people who can go onto a site, search for the best fare, and simply book the trip online. It's being estimated right now that today 20% of all travel bookings are done online. And within the next 3 years, 50% will be done online. Now that, if you are a travel agent, or if you are one of the larger sort of, you know, booking or a travel firm operators like Thompson's, that's a huge challenge for you. And what they are expecting is in the next 3 years, Internet bookings will overtake normal travel agency bookings because, you know, it's all information. You're not shipping anything.
That's true.
The ticket is, and the e-ticket, frankly. Okay, so there's that. You can pay with a credit card anywhere you want. The second industry, which is now starting to have the same issues, but right now they control information so it's slower, is the real estate industry. In the U.S., about 10 to 15% of real estate transactions happen without the MLS, Multiple Listing Service. It's expected in this case as well, it will be grow to 50% over the next 5 years. Now, in this case, information, which is in details about a house, details about competitive sales in the neighborhood, are held by the MLS, and that is the biggest obstacle to this happening. But you know, somebody will find a way to so that you can research a neighborhood, research a house, find out comparative sales, and basically say, hey, Mr. Owner, I want to make a bid, and I don't, and the seller says, hey, why should I pay 5 to 6% commission for this transaction? So these are examples of two, you know, consumer products that are currently feeling and will continue to feel a lot more heat from the internet.
So what you're saying is primarily indicating that the areas or the industries which are primarily not dealing with, you can say, tangible goods, it's more information-related business.
Mm-hmm.
That's the area where you feel that it's going to completely change, and definitely and rightfully so, because if we could remove the middleman and the internet could be used as a vehicle to transfer, it becomes almost like peer-to-peer computing. You know,
it is compared to that,
because you have a buyer and a seller, don't have anybody else, and you've got this internet which basically links the two of them. And here you go, you've got a marketplace, or you could go and bid into a marketplace, or you can do a one-on-one bidding, as you would do on a face-to-face bid.
Precisely. And so these types of industries will face problems, or, you know, will have to restructure.
And you know what, as we've already seen, that we should never be shy or be afraid of this restructuring, because I think something good always comes out of it. You become more efficient, and you can use the same workforce, which is what's being used earlier to manage such transactions, into something which would further enhance the value of each transaction that's happening.
So we can hope
for the best, and something good come out of this.
I mean look at iTunes from Apple. You can buy everything online, and they are growing in popularity. So, you know, if you're going to sell a car, no one's going to buy it on the web without doing a test drive. But a CD, you can listen to it on the web and say, yes, I want this. Well, download it. So,
yeah, I mean, and definitely. And so let's quickly look at this B2B versus B2C, because if you look at B2C earlier, that was the wave. And then we had B2B come up, and people were saying, oh, that's going to take over. And it did to an extent take over, especially when you go across borders, because people, as you said, that you would not be buying. I mean, you might place an order on Amazon or any other online channel, but there are definitely some local online shops in different countries, and people eventually end up buying from there versus buying from a place which is going to cost them an arm and a leg just from the shipping standpoint.
Precisely. In fact, if I can say one last thing about Amazon, Amazon has been actually beaten by local competition in the UK and in Germany.
I think that's very natural for them to not be able to compete on an international arena unless otherwise they had the distributing centers and, local procurement. Because, yes, while they can get a volume, but as I said, you know, the shipping part, shipping component could have a nightmare, plus the local service of the customers, that would become a nightmare, and that would add to the cost. So they would be out of business if they had to do it that way.
Precisely.
Yeah, so when we're talking about B2B, we see that B2B got up, and it is actually enhanced, it has gone beyond the B2C component.
Yes.
So is that because the fact that each transaction has a higher value attached to it, because then it offsets the cost of the transaction?
Yes, I mean, B2B unit costs, the line costs are much higher, so prices, are much higher, so you get a higher sales volume more quickly. But what's actually happened in the B2B world is two things. There aren't as many people placing orders online, but it is like companies who are connecting to each other and doing large amounts of business that electronically. Okay. The numbers that I have come from Business Week, I think they're a big big issue last year, sort of summer last year. And the size of the B2B marketplace in the U.S. is about $2.4 trillion, which is about 25 times the size of the B2C marketplace.
So when you talk about marketplace, let's clarify one thing. Some people get mixed up between e-business and e-commerce. I guess e-business is more when you're taking care of the fulfillment side, and e-commerce is when you're talking about the order-taking side.
Yeah, you know what it is? These terms have been, like, mixed together, frankly. But I think normally e-business is, yes, stuff other than placing the order.
Yeah, I see. Like, it's more fulfillment or the other background operations which were just converted over to be, transacted over the Internet. So
precisely.
That's what it is.
Now, but again, what the effect of the Internet on the B2B e-business is that most companies are not going with the cheapest supplier. Most companies are saying, hey, you know something, I want to partner with my top 5, 10, 15 suppliers. And I will negotiate closely with them and also make sure I am electronically linked to them so that when I place the order, I get a confirmation electronically, which confirms, of course, price and availability, which I can bring into my system so I can let my buyers know exactly when the goods are due in. When then my supplier ships the product, I get another update, which lets my receiving people know exactly what's coming on that truck shipment.
See, as I've always seen, and of course, you know, everybody must have noticed that whenever you have such disruptive technologies or a different, a brand new way of doing business comes up, since you do not have a differentiator, if you think about, the only way you could compete is on cost. So that becomes cost leadership model. And that's why when we started, people were saying low cost, low cost, low cost. That's the only thing people were looking at. And that's what was keeping them going so that they could keep the lights on, at least get some revenue.
Yeah.
And over a period of time, anybody, you know, it's only so much you can do because you'll always find another vendor who can undercut you on the cost.
Yes.
So then comes the point where you say, how do we keep our lights on? How do we go and show ourselves that we specialize in this, this, and this? And
sure.
That's how you differentiate. So I think this is a phenomena which has repeated over a number of cycles, if you will.
You're right. Absolutely right, Sanjog. And basically, if I think that while price is a factor, if it's not the only factor, and you have to be able to differentiate your value add versus somebody else.
That's great. Let's take a quick break, listeners. We'll be right back after these challenges and these messages. I'm so sorry because I was just about to say what we are going to talk about after the break, because that's where we will be talking about the typical challenges an organization faces while and after introducing global e-commerce as a sales channel. So please stay tuned.
Today, college graduates average 75 to 110% more income than non-graduates. But if you don't have time to go to college, let the college come to you via the Internet. At University of Phoenix Online, you can earn your degree when and wherever you want in just 2 to 3 years. University of Phoenix is the largest private accredited university in the U.S. We offer degree programs in business, technology, nursing, education, and more. Call University of Phoenix Online at 1-800-797-3011.
Looking for ways to improve your IT department? Then visit www.abbal.com today. Avaal is a professional services firm with a mission to help companies align IT with their business objectives through strategy, technology, branding solutions, and services. Our commitment is to ensure bottom-line improvements as a result of services rendered by us. Whether it's an IT needs assessment, strategy development, or related implementation, we back it up by our unconditional positive ROI guarantee. To find out how Evol can help your company, visit www.evol.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Evol, making IT work and look better. www.avval.com. Visit today.
Are you interested in the immigration laws that are increasingly affecting the way we all live? Then you need to tune in to Learner on Immigration every Thursday at 12 p.m. Pacific Time on Business America Radio. Host Brian Lerner, a certified specialist in immigration and nationality law, will give you updates on current immigration laws and allow you to call in and have your questions answered. The immigration policies of this country affect us all. Find out how on Learner on Immigration with certified specialist Brian Lerner. Heard every Thursday at 12 p.m. Pacific Time right here on BusinessAmericaRadio.com. Talk radio with a business perspective.
Talk radio with a business perspective. This is BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
Welcome back to Managing Technology the Right Way with Sun Jogal, brought to you by the University of Phoenix Online. Call in with your questions at 1-866-233-7861. Now back to the show. Here's Sun Jogal.
Welcome back again to the show, folks. For listeners who've just tuned in, today's topic is Global E-commerce, Realizing the Full Potential. And our guest for today's show is Sunil Arora. Sunil is the Vice President and Vice President for Global E-Commerce Strategy for Anixter, Inc., a $2.7 billion distributor of communications products and supply chain management services. Before the break, I mentioned about asking a particular question with respect to the challenges an organization faces when you start, or so you can say while and after, introducing global e-commerce as a sales channel. So what are your thoughts, Sunil, on this?
Yeah, you know, back in the dot-com heyday, we had a lot of companies basically starting up a separate e-commerce division. Now, I think that's a fatal mistake, okay, because in a way you set up a competitor to your own business. And from my point of view, the right thing to do is to basically think of the internet as one more sales channel which complements what your existing sales and distribution channels are doing. Back then, there was a danger of, you know, stifling creativity if they kept this, you know, brilliant new division in where the old line business is. But I'm not sure there's almost anyone left which has just a separate e-commerce division. When we started to roll out our e-commerce platform across our organization, our own salespeople said, oh, this is the first step in Anixter replacing me. And we had to educate them and tell them why this would work for them and their customers, and that their jobs would change, but we had no intention of replacing our own sales force with this e-commerce tool. We wanted them to work on larger projects or more complicated sales, just on sort of higher end sales opportunities, and have the day-to-day web ordering come in over the internet. And in Europe, that's what we did, and it succeeded brilliantly.
See, that's what, I have a friend who always talks about, you know, coming up with this, any new business idea, any new way of doing business should be keeping in mind that we are going to displace ourselves, or you can say make ourselves dispensable. The only reason we should do that for continuous growth of the company is because of the fact that if we do bring in those models or different ways of doing business, which is taking away that comfort level that we have with our existing jobs, so then we are forced to retool ourselves and take a quantum leap. Otherwise, we'll be getting stagnated. And guess what? If we are doing this and not moving on, joining the bandwagon or not growing, our competitors will do.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right.
Yeah, so let's pick up the dark side of e-commerce, which I always felt You know, we have a very good facade, which always talks about, you know, we can do great things with e-commerce. If you look at it, it does spark price wars, and which becomes actually worse when we go across countries with different resource trends and pricing structures. Mm-hmm. So while tough competition is welcome, this could have a spiral effect and wipe out, not so resourceful businesses, you know, who cannot work on very thin margins and, they would have to close their shops. So what are your thoughts?
You know, price wars will happen in the B2C world because, again, the information component is free, it's available, you can check it from your house and then buy it online. Okay, but price is almost always not the sole ingredient for buying online. I mean, that's not why everybody buys online. Even if you look at, again, I'll use the most well-known e-commerce site, Amazon. Okay, they say, we will have low prices. We will also have a large selection. Our selection will be available in our warehouse. It will be easy for a customer to buy, and we will provide the customer excellent information about the product. Now, as a shopper, am I going to go to 3-4 different sites for every single purchase? Most of us actually don't do that, because if price differences are minor, okay, we'll go to Amazon, we have set up an account, and it's easy for us, okay? We'll go to someplace else, maybe to buy music, okay? But I don't think anybody shops every time for every CD they buy. So if you're going to have the internet as your model, make sure you go into it very, very well. Otherwise, you will lose your shirt. You will not be able to compete just by having a website and prices out there.
So what do you think is the due diligence process for an organization before they start its global e-commerce arm? Because I would like to stress on the global side is because your regular e-commerce, like within the country, of course, mm-hmm. has its own parameters that govern the success. Mm-hmm. The global side of it takes, you know, it's a different animal, and it has to be mm-hmm. dealt with in a different way because we are dealing with competitive forces which are almost sometimes unknown to us.
Yeah, now, you know, the way to do, okay, say we want to set up a global e-commerce effort, right? Okay, the first thing we need to do is to say, who is going to get the product to the customer? First question, okay, before we even think about the e-commerce. The e-commerce is just, I mean, the internet simply replaces a phone or a fax in its basic, you know, format. Okay, so I don't have to call you to get product information. I can get it myself online. Okay, the rest of the stuff must happen. Now, my company is based in 40 countries, yes, and we have global prices. They're not the same, but for customer A, the price in the U.S. is 10, but the price in Europe is 12, and the price in Asia is 13, and they're fine with that because they know they can get the same excellent service in these different geographies, and they know that the costs are different over there. So no one's almost asked us. The only people who ask us for a global price are people who haven't done business internationally. So, again, this concept of a global site doesn't really exist. I don't know of any global site. Okay, the software companies do have global sites because you can download the software. Okay, Symantec or a Microsoft.
Yeah, but still they would have different pricing structure.
They do.
Yeah, that's what they have.
And they do.
They ask you for the country that you are
precisely
calling from or like connecting from, and you know they would give you pounds or dollars. And
they
even
do.
They might
precisely.
There would not be straight conversion.
They're not.
Yeah,
they're not. So this like global e-commerce doesn't really exist, or you know, in the way that people think of having one price anywhere you buy it.
Would you actually call this like another hype or another flavor of hype?
Oh, yeah. I mean, someone told me, said, oh, hey, I'm on the web, I'm global. Well, you really aren't global. Okay, you can be accessed globally, but can you deliver globally? And one of the major issues that the customers have is ease of return. If you're going to ship something out of the U.S., and then it like gets to, let's say, Germany, and it's like damaged, or I don't want it, where do I return it? Am I going to now pay another $25 or $30 to ship it across the water? So, this, you know, our global economy doesn't really exist, frankly, or our global e-commerce does not exist.
Okay, now let's look at from the technology standpoint. Being a technology show, I would definitely would like to touch upon the aspect from the back end, you know, what's happening behind the scenes to make these huge sites and huge operations work. May it be just having the website up and running, having the transactions going smoothly versus after the order has been taken, the back end fulfillment, because, you know, there's a lot going just like behind the scenes than what you have on the web. So what kind of IT infrastructure that we are talking in? We're not going to do geek speak, but at the same time, we just wanted to see what are the special considerations that should be there if you are planning to have this, or you have already started a e-commerce and you're taking it global. However, it doesn't seem to be doing right. So there has to be some baseline yardsticks that we have to establish for us to know that, okay, this is what we're going to work towards to make it successful. So what are those?
Okay. You know, the neat thing about today's IT environment is, yes, you can build it in-house. You can buy it in-house, and you can host it in-house, frankly. And, yeah, but one of the biggest issues you need to make sure of is scalability, so that you can scale up and down as needed. Okay. Secondly, you need to make sure that you are up and running 24/7. Okay, one half of our hits on our site come after hours, after business hours. You have to make sure of that. But the most important thing is, make sure your site is intuitive and easy to use. Make sure there are not too many graphics on there. They use like color and text to highlight different sections and not graphics. Okay, now, as far as the hardware and stuff is concerned, the good thing is there are several companies who will host your site for you and make sure it's fault-tolerant, make sure it's backed up.
Okay. So you think like a buy, the rent versus buy, you would choose the former because you're saying that it's better to not concentrate on just keeping the back-end infrastructure going than if you are primarily into business side versus being a technology company, then you might as well outsource. You know, that's again the word dreaded term, but this is another form of outsourcing.
Well, I'm not saying outsource to some other country.
No, you don't have to. I mean, outsourcing could be right here in your premises, but it's taken care of by somebody else.
Somebody else. The ASP model is very good for, especially if you're starting out, you don't have to make a huge investment.
So when you're saying even starting out for larger corporations, because their scale could be different. Somebody or a mom and pop could be at a very small level.
Yep.
But an organization which is as big as, say, Barnes & Noble, and when they started.
Oh, yeah.
So they would have totally different levels of needs. It would.
And, you know, one of the neat thing is that, you know, I think IT shops fall in love with, like, their own technologies. But one of the neat thing is Google is... Google runs on like Linux servers.
open source.
Yep.
And that's good. Let's take a quick break, listeners. We will be right back after these messages, and let's discuss a little bit more about this IT infrastructure and what kind of issues can somebody face when we are talking about patching the IT infrastructure and keeping it running versus trying to create a scalable architecture from the get-go, and that would save you from some sleepless nights. So please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Today, college graduates average 75 to 110% more income than non-graduates. But if you don't have time to go to college, let the college come to you via the internet. At University of Phoenix Online, you can earn your degree when and wherever you want in just 2 to 3 years. University of Phoenix is the largest private accredited university in the U.S. We offer degree programs in business, technology, nursing, education, and more. Call University of Phoenix Online at 1-800-797-3011.
Looking for ways to improve your IT department? Then visit www.avval.com today. Avval is a professional services firm with a mission to help companies align IT with their business objectives through strategy, technology, branding solutions, and services. Our commitment is to ensure bottom-line improvements as a result of services rendered by us. Whether it's an IT needs assessment, strategy development, or related implementation, we back it up by our unconditional, positive ROI guarantee. To find out how Avval can help your company, visit www.avval.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Avval, making IT work and look better. www.avval.com. Visit today.
Franchising is one of the fastest growing segments of the economy. Learn how to get involved in this exciting and profitable industry by listening to Peter Berglund's Franchise Bootcamp every Thursday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time. On the show, Peter Berglund will discuss trends and concepts in the franchise industry, as well as tips and strategies on how you can become a successful franchisor. Find everything you need to know about franchising right here on Peter Berglund's Franchise Bootcamp. Broadcasting live every Thursday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on Business America Radio.
Talk radio with a business perspective. This is BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
You are listening to Managing Technology the Right Way, brought to you by the University of Phoenix Online. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free at 1-866-233-7861. Now back to the show. Here's Sun Jogal.
Welcome back again to the show, folks. For listeners who've just tuned in, today's topic is Global E-commerce, Realizing the Full Potential. Our guest for today's show is Sunil Arora. Sunil is the Vice President for Global E-commerce Strategy for Anixter, Inc., a $2.7 billion distributor of communication products and supply chain management services. Before the break, we were talking about that while the front end looks great, there has to be some effort put into the back-end IT infrastructure, that is to make sure that it is able to scale to your operations and just sits up all the time, because that's what the very nature of e-commerce or global e-commerce is, because people will be sleeping at one end and be awake at the other. So is there anything else do you think, Sunil, you would like to contribute towards helping make a better IT infrastructure which will form the backbone of this global e-commerce?
Sure. Sanjay, the biggest fear that customers have is security of payment. So we need to make sure whatever components we put into our infrastructure give a sense of security and are secure. Secondly, privacy policy. Customers want to know what your privacy policy is. So let's say that up front. You need to make sure that you have fault-tolerant servers. You need to make sure that you have backups, because if you're not available when a customer needs you, you know, they're fickle. Customers can find information anywhere else on the web. So don't give them a chance to do that.
Yeah, they're just a click away.
Right. They are. They are. So there's very little loyalty, frankly, online.
Yeah, so you've got to make your site sticky and also, you know, giving some of the other incentive every step that they just don't walk away, they complete the transaction. So the conversion rate is better.
Conversion rate must be good. That's right.
Right. So let me ask you about the e-commerce issues, where, especially with the very nature that it has to be available 24/7. So what actually has happened and has been happening all along is that people start with a modest setup because they don't know what's going to happen to their shop. And then as they move along, they suddenly see some of the luckier few get a lot many more transactions that their initial IT infrastructure was ready to handle.
Mm-hmm.
So it becomes like a band-aid and shoestring or duct tape kind of infrastructure after some time, because they just keep on adding hardware without making much investment in just rethinking their strategy, replacing it, and even affording a little bit of downtime, which of course it is advised against, but there could be some creative ways where we can avoid that downtime and bring it to a point where IT infrastructure that is created, the new one, is ready to support the larger amount of transactions that are now happening, and also a little bit ahead in the future.
Yeah.
Also where the scaling is going to happen. So are there any creative ways, and would you say that this thought about just keeping it running by just using duct tape and shoestrings and things like that, and given the low margins that we have, they are in a way vendors are forced to do it. So what are your thoughts about this?
Well, here's something. Don't overbuild at the beginning. You don't know how much revenue you'll get. You don't know how much usage you will ever get. If you are wildly successful, rebuild your site. Okay, we did that ourselves, frankly. We did a basic site, and then when we saw what we could do with it, we actually went back and I rewrote it and built it for a much higher throughput. So that's how we solved it. Okay, but you know something? If you put millions into setting it up, you just have a much tougher ROI to make.
Yes.
Okay, and also, frankly, look at ASPs. See if they can provide you basic services to start with. You know, once you're successful, the company doesn't mind giving you more money. But if you start with a high investment, all future funding will be like, oh my goodness, how much more do you want this time?
So let's quickly look at some of the, while we discussed about some of the good things and the bad things of what has happened with e-commerce overall and the global e-commerce, there are, I guess, more horror stories than the successes. So are there any specific horror stories or fiascos or lack of management that would have caused issues with the way a global e-commerce initiative might have failed? You might have heard about it, you might have experienced it yourself, and would you like to share that?
Yeah, well, let's see. Most of the e-marketplaces have gone out of business. The reason for that is that all an e-marketplace was a online place where buyers could compare prices, irrespective of the service, okay, and no one really took that seriously, and those failed. You've had some sites failing because of too much bandwidth. In fact, American Idol, they couldn't take all their votes. Victoria's Secret catalog, right? They had their show. Their IT infrastructure wasn't set up for the high demand that was needed. But most internet sites fail just because of a lack of business model, thinking through the business model, not because of the IT components. Systems worked fine, everything worked fine, but the business model was just poor.
Oh, so you feel that, the IT is not to blame for in this case. And of course, going forward, now that we know we have done a lot of correction in the way business models are validated, now we still have to make sure that IT does not become the weakest link, because earlier we could definitely blame on business models.
Mm-hmm.
And while there was some kind of shortcoming on the IT side,
mm-hmm.
it could still was very well superseded by the lack of success or viability of that particular business model, and the whole thing failed, and we could attribute it to the you know, attributed to the business part.
Yeah.
But now we are more under the gun. I would say, you know, just beware technology leaders.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now the spotlight is on you because now the business models look promising and they have been validated.
Mm-hmm.
But then...
But make sure, IT leaders, you don't fall in love with your technology and buy millions of dollars of it. Okay. I mean, it is incumbent upon the IT leaders to approach this as a business investment issue and make sure that they make the technology decisions that will give a good payback, not just have the best technology available.
That's great. On behalf of the show and our listeners, I would like to thank you, Sunil, for sharing your experience and insights about realizing full potential of global e-commerce.
Thank you, Sanjay. It's a pleasure being here.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
I urge our listeners to participate as this is going to be the key to success of this show. In case of global e-commerce, as we saw, that IT is not just an enabler, it is the very fabric of business. Now that we have the business models more viable and they have been validated much more than in the past, so now the spotlight is on the technology to some extent to make sure that that does not become the weakest link. And there is, of course, no silver bullet, but the core principles remain the same. So given that it's global e-commerce, it takes central governance and local insight from the, you know, business transaction perspective and IT management perspective to make sure that we realize the full potential of a global e-commerce initiative. Thank you again for listening to Managing Technology the Right Way. This is Sanjog All, your talk show host. Till next Friday, take care and God bless.
Thank you for listening to Managing Technology the Right Way. Please join Sunjo Gall next Friday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time right here on BusinessAmericaRadio.com.